Are you ready to dive into the depths of intrigue and unravel the caffeinated enigmas that surround us?
Look no further than the electrifying world of Caffeinated Conspiracies, the podcast that's about to jolt your curiosity awake.
Join us for a caffeine-fueled adventure where every sip and every secret is a clue waiting to be deciphered.
In each episode, our dynamic hosts delve into the most thought-provoking and jaw-dropping theories that will leave you wide-eyed and pondering. From mysterious artifacts all the way to the depths of the ocean, cover-ups, conspiracies, the unknown, all with a cup of coffee.
Available on all major podcast platforms, subscribe now and stay tuned for mind-blowing episodes that will leave you questioning everything. Remember, truth is stranger than fiction. So let's dive into the mysteries together. Join us on Caffeinated Conspiracies, satisfying your curiosity one cup at a time.
See, feel the waves quietening the mind, breathe in time with the ocean, salt on lips, hair curls around a face, watching the wind master the tides, mighty forces battle for power, elements of air and water, insignificant but inspired, standing momentarily in this battle scene. And when it is time to leave, the forces will still rage on ceaselessly. Well, hello, witches and beautiful souls. It is I, Swales, the friendly green witch, on the Bell Witch podcast, witching in the 21st century. This is episode 25. And, oh, are you ready for this? Drum roll, please. It's my birthday! Woo! Party! Yesterday, the 3rd of March, I officially have made it to one whole year of podcasting. I'm absolutely ecstatic about it. Cannot believe I've managed to avoid pod fade and carry on for a year. So I'm going to get myself a few bubbles and celebrate my little win, because I'm proper chuffed that I'm still here. So it's a very special episode, one that's very close to my heart, that's a bit of a celebratory episode, magic of the sea. This one's all about ocean magic and what you can do magic-wise near the sea. And there's a little bit of nautical lore in there as well, because I just found it so interesting. And this all comes off the back of my recent trip to Robin Hood's Bay, which inspired me so much, which you know, I've spoke about it before, how amazing the sea was, and how I really connected with the land and I felt at home, and it were beautiful, and it inspired me to get a couple of episodes out there. As you know, I lost contact with the sea last year, but when I was thinking about my relationship with the sea, I can just remember all these amazing memories, like going to Scarborough with my mum, do you know, and there were a big landslide from all the erosion, and I remember being on a boat with her. It must have been sort of mid to late 90s. And you could see the houses falling down the cliff edge. And we were all stood on this boat nearby with binoculars watching this house. I think it were a hotel just fall down the cliff. And I remember being little and being just like flabbergasted, you know, just how big this was. And it made history in Scarborough. And we used to go to Scarborough a lot. My heart is in Scarborough. I love it. Absolutely love it. I do tend to go there every year. Collect my seawater in a jar. I remember once my mum took me on boat ride, because she used to really like boat rides, you know, like proper boats, like fisherman boats that you could hire for the day. I remember going on this fisherman boat for a tour to see the seals, but we never got there because the weather was so bad, really bad. Like, we were inside the bit where all the people sit and the waves were just crashing over the boat, and I was so sure I was gonna die. I was so scared that I was gonna die. And my mum just wasn't worried. She was loving it, you know, like the rocking of the boat. It was really bad. It's like them TikTok videos of sailors, you know, just going, way, right, cabin, slipping around and that. It was that bad. It was such a funny memory. I can't honestly believe they were allowed to go out on the ocean in that boat that day because it was so bad. I think I remember the captain kind of looking at us and going, perhaps this wasn't a very good idea. Oh my God. I remember going to Barbados for my year anniversary when I got married years ago. And we had a day on this catamaran, you know, like dipping in and out of the sea. And we were feeding these massive sea turtles that were coming right close to the tourists. And we had snorkels and stuff. And I just remember this amazing moment when I was swimming and then the guys who were doing the tour just shouted to me like, look down, look down. So I looked down and I put my face in the water. And as I did, there were just all these beautiful fish swimming right past my face. And you could feel the tails on my face, like on my cheeks and stuff. So I just went really still because I didn't want to frighten them. And the whole school of fish just swam like through me almost. And there were loads. It was one of those amazing moments in my life that I'll remember for years to come. Just like how close there were these little fishy fins on my face. Aww. So yeah, I must have an infinity with it. I remember when I was a kid, I was really inspired by dolphins and I used to collect all this 90s dolphins junk, which I'm sure a lot of 90s kids did. But one of my all-time goals was to swim with dolphins when I grew up. And I did eventually do that in Hawaii with my husband when we got married. But it was in a pool and you could tell the dolphins were quite tired. So I kind of regretted doing it afterwards and I vowed never to do any touristy stuff like that ever again. These poor dolphins were just so tired. But when I think back over my life, there is a running theme of sea, you know, that means quite a lot to me, stitched in and out of the fabric of my life and my experiences, which I forgot last year. And so when I went recently, it just lit me up. I was just so inspired, so connected. So there you go. This is what this episode is about. And I hope you enjoy it. It's going to be a really lovely episode. Remember to check out my Patreon. I do a column for Pagans of the North every Sabbat. And I also put like a preview of my column quite a while before the Pagans of the North magazine comes out. So it's like a sneak peek. And this one is about to go on the Patreon. And it is, of course, more about the sea and the ocean. And I think there's another ocean magic piece on the Patreon that I did while I was actually on the beach near Butlins in Skegness. If you'd like to support me on this journey, you can join my Patreon as a subscriber, the Bellwitch podcast. You can join for free as a taster to begin with. I think it's a week for free. Or if you want to support me another way, you can tip your witch, buy me a brew, or you can just share the podcast. Tell your friends, leave me a review and a rating wherever you get your podcasts. All these little things really do go the miles for independent podcast that like us. We do it all on a Zoom. We fund it all ourselves and we love it. We do love it, but it can be hardcore when you're on your lonesome. I hoped you liked the last one, which was a darker theme, Beauty and the Macabre, with an excellent guest that I had, Sheila. She was so fab. And yeah, so if you've not heard that, do tune into it. And I hope you're enjoying the meditation episode that I released, which also has a bit of sea theme in there, I think. And here's to another year or more podcasting. So cheers. So now it's time for It's Podcast Pals. Am I getting better at that? Yeah, I'm not convinced. For this shout out and trailer ad that I'm going to share with you, it is such a beautiful podcast. Again, searching for witchy podcasts on the old internet, surfing the web and Instagram, fell across this amazing podcast that looks stunning, but sounds absolutely wonderful. It is like poetry. It's podcast poetry. The podcast is Beyond the Seas, made in America. I think it might be New York, by a really awesome guy with a really cool theatrical voice called Kieran. And he gave me a first ever shout out on his last episode. So I thought I'd repay the favour because it is a really beautiful show. It's got the essence of the ocean woven throughout folklore around paganism and witchcraft and the elements. And the soundscape on this podcast is stunning. Definitely a before bedtime podcast. I can't recommend it enough. I really think it's beautiful. So do go out and find this amazing show. I am going to play the trailer right now. Here we go.
Grand tidings and welcome to you on this, Beyond the Seas. This show is all about the fusion of head and heart, academics and folklore, storytelling and scholarship, myth and magic. Do we need to say any more? So each week, we begin with a story that catapults us into the beyond, the lore and legends of the past that ultimately illuminate the magic and craft of the present and future. Coupled with soothing tones and tunes, this podcast is all about relaxation and reemergence of the old ways, with a bottle of wine reviewed weekly. So, join me, Kieran, as I invite you to fill your goblets, drinking horns, and chalices, while finding your comfiest of chairs, so that you may close your eyes and travel with me beyond the seas.
I mean, how lovely is that? It's beautiful, isn't it? It gives me goosebumps. That is just, it's like a sculpture in my mind. It is so gorgeous. So Kieran has this dream to get a little bit of a community going on within the witchy podcast sector. So at the moment, I've got a fantastic little community around me of podcasters, and they are mostly from the true crime, ghost stories, comedy, variety shows and nondescript social type podcasts. I don't think there's any witchy podcasts. Kind of like I'm the only witch in the village. And Kieran has this amazing idea to try and get this similar community going for witch podcasts. And they're a lovely bunch of the true crime lot. You know, they're ain't nice, man. They're ain't nice. So we kind of want this. Me and Kieran would like this for a witchy community of podcasters. So if you're listening to me and you've got your own little witchy podcast, come and email us and message us and DM us and send us your trailer and I'll absolutely play it and I'll absolutely listen to you, give you a shout out on this show and let's get some more downloads and stuff. Get some new ears on your fabulous show because you're here, you're doing it and you are absolutely fabulous witch. Absolutely fabulous. P.S. Kieran said that was theatrical. And I was like, am I theatrical? But you kind of got to be for a podcast like this because you do talk to your sen all the time. I'm just a bit weird. Anyway, without further ado, I will, get on with the main bit of the show. I hope you enjoy it. On to the main topic, which is the magic of the sea. And specifically about being a sea witch. Are you a sea witch? I'm pretty sure I am. Definitely. I absolutely adore the sea. I've come to realise that last year I was really disconnected from the ocean because I was just so busy camping and stuff. And I realised I hadn't seen the sea in a year, which is just phenomenal. I think I've mentioned this before. And I kind of vowed to myself I'm not going to let that happen again because there was something missing that year, 2023, even though I was having a great time and I was really inspired and I was really busy, I missed the sea and the relaxing ocean waves and everything about just being at the sea calms me. And it is magic. And I think a lot of people feel like that. I think especially people who live in land, they are drawn to the sea as human beings. We look at it in awe because it's just so vast and it's huge and it's a law to itself, you know, the sea can give an abundance, or the sea can take away. It's life and death. It represents emotion, water element in the tarot cards. It is the ebb and flow of life. It covers over 70% of the Earth's surface. And when you stood at the sea, as thousands, millions, billions of people have before us and will after us, it just absolutely blows my mind. It really does. When you're next to the sea, all four elements are there in abundance, from the vast ocean of water and the huge sky of air with birds in it, and the earth behind us on the beach, and the fire in the sky of the sun. There's nothing on the sea but the sea and maybe an odd ship. It's just amazing how the elements are abundant on this landscape. When you look out at the ocean, all the people that looked out at the ocean before you saw the same thing or near the same thing. And I don't think there's anywhere else on Earth that you can actually say that, because we're always changing and transforming and building and demolishing and rebuilding and desperate for change. And the sea can't really be ruled by us humans as yet, anyway. We can't really build on the sea. I mean, sure, we can drill into it and fish on it, cruise on it and ski on it, but we can't change it massively in terms of the horizon. And also in terms of underneath the ocean surface too. So when you think of the ocean, such a magical place that can be used to gain magnificent insights. And also a state of well-being and a state of calmness. If you allow the sea to work its magic on you, you will absolutely be a sea witch. So when you think of a sea witch, what pops into your mind? Sea witch, I think a lot of people would think of Ursula, the shape-shifting, magnificent, curvaceous, octopus-like queen of the dark sea. She's pretty awesome. And I saw a meme recently that said, remember, Ursula is a shape-shifter, but yet she chooses to look her authentic, beautiful, curvaceous self, you know, beauty spot and all. And I thought, oh yeah, I've never really thought of that, but it's quite cool. I also quite like Calypso, do you know, in Pirates of the Caribbean, is it 3? Calypso is such an awesome sea witch with all the little stone crabs. If I were to pick a sea witch, I would choose Calypso from Pirates of the Caribbean. And so I'm going to include a little bit of information about Calypso, the sea goddess, and all that she represents and stuff. And also, it wouldn't be a podcast episode on sea magic if I didn't include a little bit of nautical folklore, because there is masses of it. When I was doing the research, just kept coming up with sailors' superstitions, and blimey, they are a right superstitious bunch. The stuff they did and still do is amazing. You know, I think that's where the saying touch wood come from, because when ships were made in wood, it was certain woods that were thought to be lucky, like mahogany and stuff, and people would carve things in them, take them as a talisman on their voyage. And then I think that's where touch wood came from, because they touched the talisman or the ship that they'd carved stuff into, touch wood for luck. There's definitely a link there. The ocean is a vast abyss that we only know a tiny little bit about. We probably know more about the skies and space than we do the deepest oceans. The sea is such a huge, powerful beast. It is swayed by the sun and the moon with the gravitational pulls. Both the sun and the moon can affect the sea, and it does tend to follow them around the globe in like a massive Mexican wave. Think about those beautiful white horses. Huge waves that can be as big as houses. Tsunamis that gulp whole cities up after an earthquake. It's just mind-boggling how the ocean can give life, it can give gifts. From the tiniest shells and fish to eat, a good sailing outcome in weather and a calm sea, all the way through to absolute bedlam. And how do you stop water? I always think as a witch, water's probably the strongest element, because there is certain things you can do to prevent stuff happening, like a fire, you can put it out eventually. Earth can be moved around and manipulated. But water, If it's going to flood, how can you stop the flood? I mean, you can chuck a few sandbags on there, but it's not really going to happen, is it? You know, so as a witch, I have a lot of respect for water. And water changes me so much emotionally. Water speaks to my soul, especially the ocean. When I go to the ocean, I just want to stare out at the sea. And this is not a new idea. People have always been drawn to the sea from tribal people who had an amazing relationship to the sea, all the way up to Victorians who created the first seaside resorts when they were so open and connected to spiritualism and seances and stuff. And they realised there's magic in being in the ocean, near the ocean. You know, the Victorians knew that the sea healed them and that they wanted to get people into the sea. And so that is how, like, Scarborough came about, because they started building close to the coast to get people in there in the little swim gear, like getting healed from the sea. And I think I read some people used to bottle the sea like an elixir and then take it back to inland and sell it, you know, like a miracle cure. Sea water from Scarborough and far beyond Yorkshire coasts. And people bought it because they absolutely knew that the sea would heal your mind, at least help your well-being. And I think that's how seaside resorts began, because of the Victorians connecting to the sea. And yeah, that brings me on to how you interact with the sea, the ocean. Do you bring loads of stuff back with you? Do you have masses of shells and rocks around your house? Sand in a Tupperware tub, I've got a few of them. I've got jars of seawater that I use to cleanse my tools. It's really good for putting in a spray bottle of a few drops of a corresponding oil to cleanse tools and some crystals, not all crystals, because, you know, some crystals dissolve in water. Yeah, selenite, I'm looking at you. And then there's stuff like tiger's eye and malachite, which you cannot get wet because it's got toxic stuff inside it, like asbestos in the tiger's eye to get the shine, so you shouldn't really get them wet. Side note, if it's got an ite in it, like malachite, I think that's a big indicator that you can't really do much with them, include water. You can't do anything really, you can't use them as elixirs because it'll either damage the stone or it'll have some poison in it. Just stick to your quartzes. Quartzes are safe. You can do absolutely everything with quartzes because they're just a very, 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 very hard natural glass made by the beautiful earth. However, re-crystals, don't be scared, because you can still have your crystals that have poisonous stuff in them, and if they're polished, that locks it in there, so unless you drop it and it cracks, they are absolutely safe as houses. Just don't bath with them or drink water with them in and stuff. And don't put them in your gob like my kid Clementine always wants to do. So, what else? How about pebbles, rocks and stones? Because they are like crystals made by the element of water instead of found in the element of earth. There's loads you can do with rocks and shells. You can make your own runes. You can draw goddess and god on them. You can use them for divination. Again, just hold them. You can meditate with them. I mean, they are essentially crystals, aren't they? They're like crystals from the sea that have got so much power in them because they've been thrown around for years and years, becoming beautiful tactile objects, being cleansed again and again by the sea and its natural ebb and flow. The sea is so great for cleansing and grounding because it's such a mass part of our beautiful earth. So you can cleanse yourself in the sea as well as cleanse your tools. Very basic sea magic is just going for a swim in the sea, and that'll ground you and it'll heighten your vibes and connect you to earth and its amazing energies. Swimming in the sea is one of my absolute favourite things to do, and it is the most basic magic, I believe. You get in there and you're mindful of what you're doing and feeling all the waters cleanse you and, you know, move around your body and stuff, and then you can kind of do a bit of a mindfulness moment in there. Even getting your feet and having a paddle in the sea, you're still making that connection. It's still the most witches normal thing to do. That brings me on to beautiful magical hagstones. Oh, I was looking for hagstones when I were at Robin Hood's Bay, and there was none. They were just so hard to find, and it was a beautiful pebbly beach. I was pretty surprised that I didn't find any hagstones. Anyway, there we are. I do have a lot hung up over my bed. I've got a string of hagstones that goes over my side of the bed to protect me from the evil eye and negativity and bad dreams and stuff like that. I mean, it is said if you hang them up or put them on a necklace, that enhances the power because they become an amulet. And some people believe that's how you activate them. But then, of course, there's the whole, you can see the fairy realm if you look through a hagstone. It'll unlock a door, you know, for meditation. If you hold a hagstone to your forehead, you can knock on the door of the fairy realms. I always thought hagstones were made by the current of the ocean, and now the water passed them and eventually passed through them. But no, it's actually a small burrowing creature that works its way through the stones called a piddock. Piddock initiates the process. These molecules can eventually like erode through the cliff face by the time the piddock reaches maturity. It could have bored itself as far as a foot in depth into a rock face. Oh my God, I've just Googled what it looks like. And it's kind of like a white, long shell looking thing, but there's a picture of it hiding in a hole and you can just see its little mouth like, hiya. It's so cute though, these cute little critters that are, they're quite beautiful actually. They must be in a shell casing, but the little mouth's like, hey, hope you're right, I'm just munching through a rock, don't mind me, I'm making a hagstone, witches. So that's how hagstones are made. I didn't know that. I thought that was really cool. Hagstones have been recorded as protection amulets for livestock and buildings since the 17th century. The most popular use for the hagstone was hanging it on stables to protect the horses from being ridden by witches, apparently, which is kind of ironic. That's probably why they had the name hagstone, to keep their hags away from their horses. But I think there's more history before then. Prior to that, the hagstone is an even older witch's charm for good luck and averting negative energies, which should never be given away, or good fortune will follow it. So you'd always have to keep your hagstone round your neck, and it'd keep that good luck coming to you. So if you're lucky enough to find one, you could keep it as a precious gift to yourself. If you found lots more, you could give them to your mates. I do love a hagstone, and I refuse to buy them off Etsy because I think that's a bit of a con. I found loads on Brighton Beach. Brighton Beach is fantastic for finding hagstones. A few years ago, I went down there and I found loads and loads, which are the ones hanging over my bed. I also found this absolutely stunning hagstone. I liked it so much. I walked to the tattoo shop and got it tattooed on my arm. So yeah, I've got a little hagstone on the back of my arm to protect me wherever I go. An old Irish belief says that to place a white stone in a bowl of clear water if you wish to discover who is causing you mischief, and wait for images to appear in your mind. So again, that's divining with gifts from the sea, but I've never heard the white stone one before. It's pretty awesome. I should totally try that. There's also driftwood. You could make wands out of driftwood, but I find it quite hard to find big pieces of driftwood. They tend to be quite diddy. I'd love to make a wand driftwood, actually. In fact, if I got a bit of driftwood, I probably wouldn't do aught to it. I'd just use it as a wand. So I might have to try and manifest that. You know, while I were at Robin Hood's Bay. Oh, it was so good. There is this little tunnel, you know, where the stream meets the sea and goes into the ocean. It just really fascinated me, all this water, clean fresh water from the hills of the Moors, of the North York Moors, continuously pouring into the sea. It's just amazing. It really enchants me. But this is really good for magic, apparently, where the sea and the river meet. It's like where fresh water meets the salt water. It's really good for confusion and chaos. So you can do magic to cast spells. Where the fresh water and sea water meet is a perfect place to cast spells of confusion and chaos. I'm just reading out of this fantastic book that I got called Traditional Witchcraft for the Seashore by Melusine Draco. It is a really good book, and it wasn't that expensive, I think, because it's quite old. And bits and bobs I knew in it already, and some stuff was just well cool. Yeah, there's definitely a pull where the two waters meet. And many of them you can trace right back to the end of the last ice age, when the deep river valleys were flooded about 10,000 years ago. It's crazy! Did you know there were four tides to represent each element? So sea tides, obviously, is element water. And this is at the time of the local high tides and low tides. And then you've got earth tides, which is the element of earth. And that's at the time of the full and new moons. And atmospheric tides for air at the times of the moon's first and third quarter. And then you've got your cosmic tides, which is fire. And this is at a time of increased sunspot activity. So I guess that would be in the summer, wouldn't it? The spring and summer. I never thought about them being more than just one tide. Well, I was researching. I kept coming across this fabulous experiment that was done with clams and oysters. Loads of clams and oysters were collected from the sea and taken miles away to a different seaside. Clams open and close with the currents of the ocean, and they depend entirely on the currents to tell them how to live their lives, you know, the little clamshell lives. People took them thinking they won't be able to still open and close because they're not at that sea. And for a while, they did follow the original tides of their homeland. But as they were left in this new place near the new sea, they slowly began to follow the currents of the nearest ocean. Having not even been in that ocean, the whole body clock behaviour changed and matched the current seasonal change of their now local ocean. Isn't that phenomenal? You know, so to me that says, if we tune in to our bodies and the ocean, make that connection, because we're made up of so much water. I mean, it's obvious we're going to be affected by the moon and the sun and the ocean. We just need to be mindful of it and make that connection. Be like the clam and try and tune into the tidal waves. So brilliant. I love it. Oh, this bit is right good. Swales likes this bit. I'm just going to have to tell you about nautical folklore and sailors and stuff, because it was just so cool. They have so many ancient customs, and it's thought to be a survival of pagan sea god and goddess worships. Observe well into the 20th century. Fishermen would construct garlands of flowers for the wooden frames, you know, the figureheads for each fishing boat. And the garlands were carried around the houses and blessed before taken out to the sea and thrown overboard as a kind of offering to the sea for a good voyage. The townsfolk would carry fire around the town of each fisherman's house, asking for the energies of the sun and stuff to keep them warm and keep the tides calm. And then eventually they'd finish at the boat before the voyage, take the flame on the boat and then put it out before they set off, which is a pretty cool little internet fact that I found. Cats on board were considered extremely lucky, and there'd often be a cat as part of the team on the voyage, and this cat would get treated so well because it was like their little lucky omen that they'd look after it. If the cat fell overboard, it was not a good sign, and the fishermen and the sailors would be just so worried. Contradictorily enough, though, a woman on board, everybody knows, was bad luck, wasn't it? Even though the figurehead on the boat, which was like the most important part of the boat, was always a female with her boobs out, you know what I mean? Boobs, there's always boobs. Some think this is because she represented the soul of the ship, and that is why ships even today are considered a she, because she was like a goddess made for the ship's soul, and if it was to get damaged or fall off again, that'd be certain doom. So this figurehead would get looked after intensely by the crew, and I think there'd probably be a job just looking after this figurehead at the front of the boat. You know, people thought she couldn't sink the ship. The ship wouldn't sink if it had a figurehead. And the name of the vessel would be a big part of this identity of the ship. And it was chosen with great care. It got chosen when the ship hit the water, you know, before it set off. It had to be in water before they could name it. So I think there's some connections there as well with smashing stuff against the ship, maybe, to name it. I don't know. I bet there's lots of little connections there. There's also a link recorded with the belief almost 2,000 years ago that a storm may be lulled by a woman uncovering her body out to the sea. So the sea could be cross and then you'd see the figurehead with boobs out and hopefully that would calm the sea. So maybe if the vessel that they were sailing was a woman, perhaps there was only enough room for one woman on the voyage and they didn't want to upset the goddess was represented by the figurehead. I don't know. You know what I'm like? I like to just speculate on stuff like this because I kind of get little feelings and little thoughts here and there. And I think that might be one, at least, of the reasons why women were bad luck on the ships for a voyage. Oh, they were so superstitious. I love it. And what's amazing as well is a lot of things we say today and do, especially from a witch's point of view, has got roots in nautical folklore and tradition. Everybody knows red sky at night, shepherd's delight. Red sky in the morning, sailor's warning. That was like a proper hardcore truth when sailors are going out and using the weather to determine whether it was a good idea or a bad idea to set sail. Like the seaman's ability to read the sky is massive and should not be dismissed. Like the lore about the clouds and the sky colour, like they were more reliable than bewitching stuff about birds and beasts. And even the weather depends like on the shade of blue. You might think that a blue sky is really good, but it's not always the case. It depends on the shade of blue. A very dark blue sky against clouds are sharper defined as a forerunner of a stormy weather coming. But a soft blue light means settled weather. So they knew all this, and then they used to create rhymes, you know, to pass on to other sailors. And over time, they became little ditties that we know today. And they used to throw coins over as well. Maybe that's why we throw coins into water now, because it's got historic roots in good luck charms for sailors. Do you know what I mean? It's so cool to think about it. In Britain and Ireland as well, seagulls were traditionally thought to be the souls of seamen that died at sea. Given the nature, look and cry of the seagull, because they seemed like the shriek, it was pretty dodgy bad luck to have a seagull come onto your ship. They'd think it were a bad omen from another sailor that might have died and be lost to the ocean. It reminds me of that crazy film. Have you seen that black and white film? And I think it's just called Lighthouse, based on that strange mystery. I just had to Google what it was called. It was in the 1900s. And it were these fishermen that went missing on the Flannan Isles. And they just had vanished, like these three sailors had just vanished into thin air. Sailors lost their mind on this tiny little island looking after a lighthouse. Left in mysterious circumstances, and they were... Clocks had stopped and there were coats about and food left on the table, and it's a proper conspiracy story. The film Lighthouse is based on that story. I recall somewhere reading a long, long time ago, sailors didn't bother to learn how to swim because if somebody fell overboard, they felt it was their destiny, you know, like the sea had chosen them, and to rescue somebody from drowning, that would piss the sea off even more. And so common practice to just leave sailors overboard to drown so they didn't piss the sea off. How crazy is that? I mean, that's barmy, but I can believe it. They used to have evil eyes painted on the boats for extra protection against people who wished them ill will. In Greece and Spain, the evil eyes were painted on the boat to add to the protection that they all desired. I mean, it was risky business, wanted to go out there on a wooden boat and be lost to sea. There was another story I quite liked concerning a whooper. The whooper appears to have been a former genius loci from Cornwall. The whooper made a whooping sound from a thick blanket of mist that sometimes formed in perfectly clear weather above this cove. Apart from foretelling severe storms, the whooper protective qualities had uncanny abilities to prevent any fisherman from passing through the opening of sea whenever a storm was threatening. If you ignored this whooping, then you'd have to battle your way through mist and storms and probably be never heard or seen from again. So it was a big deal to listen to this whooping noise. It must have filled sailors with such fear, but they'd have to stop what they were doing and listen to it. Probably this perfectly natural explanation, perhaps the way the sea hits the cliff along the pathways and it would make a natural whooping noise in certain weathers. Folklore is a warning of the times that gets passed down again and again and becomes something magical and kind of astonishing and kind of scary. I can't believe how witchy they were. There was a well-known seafarer's amulet that is said to protect against drowning, and that was caul, I think it is, C-A-U-L, which is a membrane that covers the baby's heads at birth. The baby were born with this caul was considered so lucky. And as long as the caul remained in its possession, the owner would never drown. So it was so important to fishermen, they'd pay up to 20 quid in the 20th century, like early 20th century. So that must have been quite a lot of money. But I mean, would it not just rot away? How gross is that? But yeah, these babies were considered lucky. And then perhaps they would end up growing up to be fishermen because they were born with this membrane on the head. Also, I was looking at sailors' crafts. And because they had time, because I guess they were on the ocean for a very long time, they learned how to carve amulets and lucky possessions in whalebone carvings and stuff. So there you go, they're your first talismans and lucky objects. But then they'd also use ropes to create, I can't ever say it, you know, where you make planters out of, is it macrame? 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 So dyslexic! Can't say it, but you know what I mean. You know the hanging planters where you not make perfect art out of knots? So these sailors were doing that on the boats when they were bored. And then they'd also do, now get this, knots in string or rope and sing to it as they did it for good luck. A spell? I mean, that's a spell, isn't it? That could be a witch's ladder. That could be a knot spell. How amazing is that? These early sailors were witches. They were doing witchcraft with the stuff that they had lying around on the boats. I just think it's so cool. It is so cool. Love it. So yes, I'm very inspired by all that. And it's all from this book, Traditional Witchcraft for the Seashore. I just thought I'd pick a few bits out that made me go like, ooh, like that. So that brings us on to, how do you use the sea and the ocean in your witchcraft today? Which just makes me so excited. Of course, we're going to bring stuff home. You can make an altar with the shells that you've brought home. You can do divination with shells. And you know them glass fishing net floats? You can divine kind of like a crystal ball, but from old fishing floats. But not the replicas, you know. It's got to be, well, it'd work better if it was from hundreds of years of fishing. That would be amazing. In fact, I might try and put my feelers out, see if I can get one. Just see if I can scry in it. Can scrying everything, really. Did you know you could scry in rock pools? Be on an evening, calm sea, if there's rock pools, you could use the moon to look at the reflection in the sea. Moon glade is called. So this is a path of moonlight across the actual sea that's broken and catching the motion of the waves between the moon and the watcher. In Tudor times, this term, moonshine in the water, was a common phrase for empty notions or dreams. To bring some seawater home with you and put it in a bowl and add some ink or throw some shells in it and be open-minded and have a meditate on it and see what comes to you. Seawater's great for moon water. Can you imagine if you got seawater and then got it under moon, a full moon, it'd be just so heavily charged up. And then you can bath with it then, put it a tiny bit in the bath. It can cleanse you and ground you. It's just so good for cleansing because of all the movement and the heat and stuff. Seawater to bath with is high up on my list of things to do. The problem with that, though, is I go through it quite quick and I only take a jar every time I go to the seaside. Should probably take a bucket with a lid. Another amazing thing you can do to see if your body recognises the tides of the ebbs and flows of the earth is if you stand next to the ocean and put your hands together to feel your aura between your palms and just see what it feels like in full tide when the tide's in. See if it makes any difference. And then come back and do it again at the seashore when the tide is far out. And see if it feels any different. I mean, you should be able to feel a slight tingling or a heat or a coldness. It takes practice. But if you did this for a week or so while you were on holiday, and then when you go home, you could check the times of the high tide where you were and practice it at home and see if, like them amazing little oysters in that tank in a different town, be like the oyster and see if you can pick up on the vibes of the tides, you know, to use it in your witchcraft so then you can adjust your timings and conform to what you want from the tide. But I think it would do something. I think I would be able to feel something, perhaps a bit like Reiki, the feeling of Reiki coming through your hands. Oh, I've just said Reiki now and my hands have started pulsating apart, you know, because I just mentioned Reiki and that because I'm putting my hands together to feel it and I can feel the heat. Sorry, Reiki, I didn't mean to say that. Turn it off quick. When you take stuff from the beach, shells and rocks, be mindful what you're taking. I mean, I do take quite a lot, especially my kids take quite a lot, but I always have it in mind that I absolutely will return these items when we're finished with them, when they've grown up. When I want different ones, I'll take them gradually back to the ocean, and that's kind of like an offering. But also you could make offerings to the sea that aren't litter. I must emphasise that are not litter. You know, you could create an altar on the beach with the things around you, which I find quite beautiful. And then when the ocean comes in, it'll take it with it. This altar that you've created with love and respect. Also, wouldn't it be great if we could get into the habit of every single time we went to the beach, we take litter home with us, you know, that isn't even ours. Yes, of course, we take our own litter with us, but can't it be normalised that we take a bag and we just take a little bit of litter home with us from the beach or put it in a local bin or whatnot? That is an offering, not necessarily an offering that you give physically, but an offering in terms of an intention to do good. And to look after the sea, because even though the sea is mighty, you know, it needs help at the moment. It's got plastic in it, it's got carrier bags in it, you know, the fish are eating the straws and we're eating the fish, so we're eating as plastic. I mean, I can't dwell too much on that because it does make me actually quite upset. And a few years ago, I had to do the tapping, you know, the emotional freedom technique to get over the worry of the earth, because it was just keeping me up at night. It was just so hardcore. Worrying about the state of plastic and stuff. But if all those pagans did this every time we went to the beach, it didn't have to be loads, could just be a handful of bottles, carrier bags, even bottle tops from people's beers, you know, every little helps and it'd just be so wonderful to give back to the earth that way. I love the sound of the beach. I love the where you can hear the sea in a shell, in a conch when you put it to your ear. That's magic. When we were there at Robin Hood's Bay, my two daughters spent most of the time putting shells to Rio, going like, oh, can you hear that sea? Can you hear that sea? And I was like, yep, that's the magic of the sea. It gives us so much, and people meditate to ocean sounds and dolphins and stuff. It gives to us in so many ways. It's beautiful. Anyway, I found this sea blessing ritual whilst I was doing a bit of a Googling because I wanted to give you an action for the sea. It's also important to mention, follow your instincts, follow your intuition. You don't really need a how-to. As long as you're being mindful of what you're doing, you're not causing harm to the earth. If you're feeling the need to create something out of sticks or take certain shells home and do stuff with them and write on them and bury them in your garden or art with them or journal with them, you know, that's right. That's your instinct telling you you're making a connection to this ocean and this is how you'd wish to do it. Anyway, so this is a sea blessing ritual. And I got this from the centreofexcellence.com. Can you believe they do a sea witch course? How amazing is that? An introduction to sea witchcraft. And it's only like 20 quid or something. It's well good. I suggest you go and have a look at that because it sounds bloody brilliant. So that's centreofexcellence.com. Sea blessing ritual. Begin by standing on the shore with your feet in the water. Take a moment to ground yourself and connect with the energies of the sea. Hold your shell that you've chosen from the beach and visualize your intentions for healing. Take time doing this. Out loud, speak your intentions and then sprinkle a few drops of seawater over your head, allowing the sea to cleanse your spirit. And take time to just look at the ocean. It's just such a good thing to do, just to stare at the sea. I spend so much time of my life doing that when I am near the ocean. You know, and maybe you could call in a goddess to help you out. There are loads of goddesses out there that are connected to the ocean, Neptune and Hecate. But the one that stood out to me for this was Calypso. There doesn't seem to be much written about Calypso. Technically, she's not a high-up goddess. She's like a nymph. And she had lots and lots of sisters that were all ruled by a sea king who was Trident, that's from Bloody Little Mermaid, isn't it? Of the Titan Oceanus and his sister wife, Tethys. Sister wife? What the heck? She was, along with one of her several sisters, one of the companions of Persephone. When the maiden was abducted by Hades, the god of the underworld, her name may signify sheltering in a cave. So Calypso possesses healing powers that can give or can take away, very much like the sea. She's known for trapping a mortal for 7 years because she wanted to marry him and have lots of babies. And he were pleading to leave, and so she allowed him to make a boat, giving him bits of material. Because he wasn't much and he worked hard. It took him 7 years. Calypso is so powerful she can control and manipulate the air to her own advantage, enabling her to get clear perspective and understanding and good old swords energy, you know, just cut through the bullshit. She doesn't suffer fools gladly, you know, she gets shit done. She seems like such a cool goddess. I really like her. I always think about Pirates of the Caribbean when thinking about Calypso, do you know, where they're trying to release her and they've got to let her shed her mortal bounds, but they've got to say it in the words of a lover. The main guy, oh, what's he called with a peg leg? I can't bloody remember. Captain Barbossa, there we go. I proper just digged it out of my head then. But he's like, Calypso, I release you. And everybody's like, no, no, it's got to be more authentic. The character with the eye that is always rolling around the ship, like lovingly just sneaks up to her and whispers in her ear that he sets her free, and that works. And I really like that because it just shows, you know, like she has this thing where she needed love from the people who were requesting to sail on the ocean well and unharmed, you know, like she needed to be loved by, in the story, mortals. She's also known for crabs. I mean, in the film, she turns into loads of stone crabs, doesn't she, that just disappear into the ocean. Crabs are quite cool symbolism, like magical meanings. Of course, they're connected to the moon and the yin energies. It's on the moon card, isn't it? The crab under the moon. Or is it a lobster? So it's all about the hard shell, the protection against weakness and vulnerability. The ability to sidewalk, indicating that they can step aside from certain confrontational situations. You know, they've got the armour, they're very level-headed, they're good at self-protection, and they've got the armour and they can give you a right nasty pinch if you piss them off. So there's some sort of mystical, magical moon card. It's a mystery, you're not meant to know. The sea is deep and mystical. Oh no, I've just had a look and it's a lobster on the moon card. Deceptional. Similar, but yeah, it's about the unknowing. It's unknowing, but having the armour and the ability to adapt and trust in the universe. So I really like that about Calypso having infinity with curvaceous animals under the sea. And she's such a hard ass. I need to work with her. She sounds bloody brilliant, I tell you. Just a little bit of sea animal symbolism there, as well as a bit on the goddess of Calypso. I did go on a bit of a wild wave of wonders. It's fun though. So anyway, that's my little ramble on sea magic. And next time you're at the beach, have a think to yourself. Do you consider yourself a sea witch? Are you drawn to the ocean? Do you love being next to it? Do you take the beach home with you? Dot it around your house and use it in your witchcraft? It's such a beautiful element. And when I go to the coast, it heals my mind and my body and my spirit. And I am so glad to be by the seaside. You have been listening to the Bellwitch podcast, Witching in the 21st Century, written and produced by me, Swales, a friendly green witch. Official podcast photographer is Beverly Thornton. Music by Jeff Harvey of Pixabay, made on WavePad Master and distributed via Zencaster. Want to come and guest on the show or got a topic you'd like me to cover? Email me at thebellwitchpodcast@yahoo.com. If you're enjoying the show, please leave me a review. Thank you for listening and stay magical, witches!